10. Grammy and ashtray. Hello, everybody. That's Jeff Pitchell's Fat Cigar you've been listening to, and that means it's time for Not Just Blowing Smoke, coming at you live from Twin Smoke Shop Studio Headquarters in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Be sure to subscribe to us on Podbean, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, or Google, or wherever else you get your podcast from. I'm Pastor Padron, everybody. I'm here with Nick Otine.
Yeah.
And tonight we are going to start off by smoking the Alec Bradley TAA 2023 exclusive limited edition Toro.
Yeah,
this was a cigar that started shipping around November, I think, of last year.
Really?
And we're good friends with the people at Alec Bradley, and was it Ruben?
Yes. Bradley Rubin that
Bradley,
was here.
Bradley Rubin was here.
Bradley Rubin was here.
I get the dad and the son confused just like you.
Yes,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I forgot
he was here.
The dad's name, but last name is Rubin. So
he was here last week, and we ended up getting another 10 boxes of this cigar.
Nice, nice.
And it is it's a Criollo 98 cigar.
So is that pronounced Criollo or Criollo? I always said
Criollo.
It's Criollo.
Right.
I always said Criollo. Because if you look at the name, that's what it sounds like. Or that's what it looks like it sounds like.
If you're English.
I am English.
Yes. But it's a Honduran Criollo 98 wrapper. And then Honduran and Nicaraguan Criollo,
yes,
98 binders,
mm-hmm.
And then Honduran and Nicaraguan Criollo in the fillers.
Oh.
They're all from different regions, though. That's, I think, what makes everything different.
So it's not a puro. It's mostly all Criollo, but it's not a puro. Puro comes from one region,
one country, right?
Well, one region, yeah. So that's nice. Well, I'm excited about this. We got this in today, and I was like, Criollo 98 from and Corojo 98, or those are like the original seeds from Cuba that
yes.
everybody grabbed when everybody went to Honduras.
Right.
Obviously, you have Aladino. They have the Corojo 98, which is the original seed.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, and the Criollo is out there as well. I mean, Honduras, Nicaragua. So, I mean, I was really excited. I read the description on it, and I'm like, they're really kind of going a little bit different than their usual blends. Usually, a lot of times, they'll stick to Nicaraguan and just do Nicaraguan and Honduras,
mm-hmm.
do a San Andreas wrapper or a San Andreas binder, which you're seeing a lot right now in the industry, really utilizing that. But this, I mean, the only other company that I've seen that sticks to the Criollo 98 is Christoph.
Yeah.
In the Christoph original,
mm-hmm.
which is a cigar that plays really close to my heart. I love that cigar. It's just absolutely phenomenal. Well, thank you very much, Lissa.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate you. Mm. And we have a little, even though the cup says a capo and you guys can't see that right now, but this is Brugal. So Brugal, well, it's more than just Brugal. It's 1888 Brugal.
That's right, yep.
Which is one of the top-of-the-line Brugals or drinks or rums that Brugal puts out. They put out a ton of rum, I mean, from the Añejo to your regular Brugal that you would get at the liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
But this stuff is the top-of-the-line stuff.
Oh.
This is the top-of-the-line. This is dark rum.
Mm-hmm. It's very,
it's
very good.
Very smells. The fragrance on it is very, very nice. The nose is Just,
you know who turned me on to this was Steve Poirier.
Really?
Yeah. He recommended He recommended this as a great rum, and I don't think he was wrong.
All right, so let's get into it. Oh,
good,
wow.
Good, rich, dark, sweet notes.
Oh, yeah. Some dark caramel at the end and the finish. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even lit up my cigar yet. How
really?
Dare I?
Well, you need to get going.
I wanted to do the old cold draw for the people that ever hear that. I mean, it was years ago. I used to be involved in a show called The Cold Draw. And what we used to do on The Cold Draw is we used to light it on the show.
Right.
And we used to do a little smell of the foot. And that smells like a cigar.
Yep.
And the cold draw, of course. Nice. Tastes like a cigar.
Tastes like a cigar.
Now I'm going to light this baby up.
Yep, light it up. It's got some good, solid, you know, kind of a little bit of, well, you know, when people say that a cigar has, like, woody taste, part of me, like, just wants to laugh because, I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, it should taste woody. Every cigar should taste a little woody because that's basically what you're smoking is leaves that are made of what? Wood.
Well, organic material, obviously. But, I mean, you're going to get some of that from the aging rooms. So they have them, they have all the cigars before they get shipped out in aging rooms, which are all cedar. I mean, the ones that are prominently, like, really heavy in the cedar note is Byron's and Atabays and the Alfonso's. I mean, those, I mean, what he does in those cigars, I mean, he, you know, completely hydrates them, then dehydrates them, and he does that over and over. And then as he's doing that, he switches out the cedar, correct?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, the cigars breathe in the cedar that's in the room.
Right, correct.
Right. All those aromas and everything
that
the tobacco just takes on.
So, yeah, so I mean,
there's a lot of cedar on this cigar.
Yeah, there is.
There's a little bit of earth. There's some nice spice there. I'm still trying to figure out what kind of spice it is. But I think the rum adds a nice little bit of sweetness and that deep caramel to it. I think it's going to be a good pairing with the cigar.
That's... You get that smooth cedar note in there, which is really, really pleasant. Really subtle in the spice. But, I mean, it's a really good cigar. I know I just lit it, and, you know, maybe you got to come back to me a little bit later with the rum and everything. But, I mean, it's really nice. I'm very happy with it.
All right. Well, good. Well, while we're smoking the cigar here, let's talk a little bit about what's happening at Twins.
Twins.
We've got some cool events coming up we want you to know about. And the first one of those is a Foundation Cigar Company event on Saturday, April 13th from 5 to 9 p.m. That's going to be taking place right where we're recording in the 724 Lounge upstairs. There's going to be the highlight of that event is going to be a roundtable discussion.
A foundation roundtable.
Led by none other than Eduardo Aguilar, who is the head of sales, the national head of sales for Foundation. And for those of you wondering what that means, that basically means he's the number two guy.
He's the number two guy.
He's right under Nick. And, you know, Nick is spending more and more time down in Nicaragua.
I mean, that guy never leaves.
He's about 6 months out of the year, he's living there. And then,
oh, my God.
You know, so, you know, but Eduardo, I've met him a number of times. We talk on the phone, you know, a fair amount. He is so awesome, well-spoken. He's very charismatic.
Yeah.
And, excuse me, he's going to be leading a discussion about, of course, the history of Foundation and, you know, their brands and the blends and all that stuff. But he's also going to be talking about the Connecticut River Valley and how and its importance to the cigar industry and their commitment to that and what they're doing to that. They just they've made a lot of investments in that area and in an attempt to really kind of put their foot down that they're going to try and really keep that cigar industry alive.
I mean, there used to be a ton of farms down there.
Right. Now, every year it gets less.
Yeah, now there's just, how many farms are down there now?
I don't know.
I've never been down there, but I need to try to get myself down there.
You can still go down and see lots of tobacco fields. You can see the barns from the highways and stuff, but it's not near as much as it was.
Oh,
and it's just, you know, with the way the government is coming in on things and coming down on things, it's getting harder and harder to do it. And but Connecticut broadleaf and other tobaccos that are grown in the Connecticut region.
Right.
Like his, you know, Havana Seed 142 Connecticut, which is something that only he does.
Yep.
And only there in the Connecticut River Valley.
Yeah.
There are great tobaccos there that we want to keep going. And he's going to be talking about that. If you want to get in on that roundtable discussion with him, it's real simple. You buy a five-pack of Foundation cigars for $59.99. And, you know, there's an Oxum cigar in there.
Yeah.
There is a...
you have Charter Oak in there, but it's the Charter Oak Pasquale?
The Pasquale, there is a regular Charter Oak in there as well. But there's the Oxum, there's an Olmec.
There is, yes.
Yep.
There's a Highclere Castle Victorian.
And a Highclere Castle Victorian. So five cigars, really good cigars. And you get that for $59.99, and you come to the event on the 13th at 5 o'clock right up here. That's when we're going to start the round table. And you're going to get another cigar for buying the five-pack. And you're going to get to smoke that cigar with him and take part in the round table. He's going to do a presentation. That's very interactive, and it's going to be a really, really good time. And there'll be special drink pairings that will be available to purchase that will go with the cigars in the pack and the cigar you're going to get. And the cigar you're going to get is good. Don't worry, it's not going to be a Charter Oak. It's gonna be, you know, we're hoping that it's something really special, but we have to, you know.
It's undisclosed.
They've been undergoing a lot of changes over there.
They have, yes.
Yeah, their Eloense cigar and the Eloense, you know, the Wise Man Maduro version of that cigar have been discontinued in that form and have been reimagined and re-blended in cahoots with Don Pepin. My father. And now my father's coming out with the Wise Man Claro and the Wise Man Maduro for Foundation. And he's going to be talking about them. And we're hoping that we actually have those cigars at the event. You know, the timing of when stuff arrives from Nicaragua is going to be really tight.
Yep.
But if it happens that way, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
that
I can't wait. Just those two cigars, he went from AJ Fernandez to now Don Pepin. Mm-hmm. And those cigars are going to be completely reblended. Those are going to be absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
Well, they were fantastic in the beginning, but now going to Don Pepin making them.
Right. And this is a blend that
totally different.
Nick Melillo and Don Pepin did together. It was a collaborative thing.
Yep.
So I'm really excited about those. And then the next event we want to tell you about is a three-leaf cigar, which is Eric Wentworth's new venture. You may remember Eric from Hammer and Sickle Cigars. He was the VP
the good old days.
For Hammer and Sickle for about 10 years. He's back with a cigar of his own called Three Leaf. It's available in Connecticut and Habano.
Yep.
And there's six different sizes of those. He and his partner, Jim, are going to be here on April 19th. From 4 to 9 o'clock, and purchases of three-leaf cigars during that time are going to go – they're going to be giving away a DuPont lighter and cutter.
That's right.
That's worth about $500.
Oh.
A DeFi Extreme lighter, which is a lighter that's designed to work at really high altitudes.
Yeah, that's why it's called the Extreme,
Yep. And a really, really cool black DuPont cutter.
Ooh, and those are beautiful.
Yeah, I mean the cutter's
$100 easy, $100-$150 easy. You go online. I mean, every cutter that DuPont has,
there's nothing less than it.
It's $150 or up, depending on depending on the cutter, I mean, it's fantastico.
Yep. They're sitting in my office. It's going to be awesome to give those away. Very excited about that. So don't miss that day, April 19th, here at Twins in Londonderry. It's going to be great. Eric and Jim will be here for that whole event, as will Brian Sonia, who's their broker.
Yep.
Brian's a good friend of ours, too.
Oh, yeah, Brian.
He's awesome.
Used to call him Brycar back in the day.
Mm-hmm. When he worked for Zycar.
He worked for Zycar. I used to call him Brycar. Mm-hmm. That was his nickname that I had for him. Good guy, man. Good guy.
So let's talk a little bit about, TV.
TV.
You know.
The tube. Well,
this is something, you and I both, are kind of into that whole thing. And one of the things I there's a whole bunch of supposedly wicked binge-worthy, historical shows. Like when Game of Thrones came out, everybody was talking about it.
Yeah.
And you either loved it, you hated it,
Did you get into that? Did you watch it?
I did. And I got into it because, especially, being a pastor, you would hear about this show and all the gratuitous sex and violence and everything. But everybody was watching it. And so I gotta watch. I'll watch an episode and see how it is.
Yeah.
And I got totally hooked.
You did?
I did.
Never got into that.
I did. I got hooked, and I watched the whole thing, and there are parts of it where I think it really was one of the best shows, on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But, as I watched it, you're talking about war. You're talking about, was there nudity? Was there sex?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But it really, the more I watched it, the more I thought it was really geared around the story,
mm-hmm.
and not like, hey, let's throw some skin on the screen and throw some lyrics around it so that people, you know what I mean? So there was story there, and it moved the story along. It wasn't, in my mind, it wasn't gratuitous.
Right.
Gratuitous is unnecessary, unneeded,
It was necessary nudity,
mm-hmm.
put it that way.
Right. But, there's that. There's, Yellowstone is one of these things.
I just got into Yellowstone.
You told me you just got into Yellowstone.
That is something I
hear about it, and Kevin Costner is like one of these guys that, for me, he's either going to be really good or he's not.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever watched a show or a movie of Kevin Costner that I didn't like.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
No, I enjoyed that one.
Oh, come on. He was so bad. He was like the only person in that movie without an English accent.
That's true.
He was
so dog-tired
from finishing Dances with Wolves.
Oh, my God.
Which, was like his magnum opus movie.
Yeah.
And, directed it, starred, produced, won all the awards and everything.
That's true, yeah.
And then he went and did this, and he was like, no, the reason you watch Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is for the sheriff.
Yeah, that's true.
What was his name? Oh my gosh, why can't I remember? He also played Snape in the Harry Potter movies. He was the bad guy in Die Hard.
Oh my God.
Why can't I remember his name?
I know, and he passed too. What a great actor. Mm-hmm. My God. Alan Rickman. I don't know why the name just came to me, but Jesus.
Alan Rickman is an amazing freaking actor.
Yes.
Anything he does, I could watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he has the best lines in the movie.
He does, yes.
Yeah,
he does. But Yellowstone.
I'm going to cut your heart out with a spoon. Why a spoon, cousin? Why not a knife or an axe or a... Because it's dull, you twit, it'll hurt more.
I think you're getting that mixed up with...
Nope.
You sure?
Nope. Yep.
Because they said that same line in Robin Hood Men of Tights.
Then they got it from Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
They did it right. I mean...
Oh, my gosh. The way he just says it is just perfect.
But Yellowstone, my friend Jay, when we were coming back from Puerto Rico, he picked us up, and we're talking about movies and shows and stuff like that, and he's big into doing the series and not really a movie guy, and I'm the opposite. I love watching movies, probably because you have to, if you got like a show that's like, look at Game of Thrones. How many seasons does that thing go for?
Six, I think.
It went for six, you know what I mean? So I can't sit down and watch 10 episodes, 60 episodes through the whole thing. Sometimes I don't have time, but I have time for 2 hours, three-hour movie. I can do that. But, all right, I started watching Yellowstone. First episode got me hooked.
What got you hooked about it?
I mean, the opening scene is Kevin Costner that was in an accident. Spoiler alerts, everybody, so... I mean,
that's the first episode, opening scene. I mean,
yeah, opening scene. He gets into a car accident with his horses, and he has to put it down. He grabs his .357, and he just shoots it. He's talking to it. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. You deserve better than this." And bam, it's lights out for the horse. It's action right from the get. Action right from the get. And I mean, this guy. So. The premise of this movie is he owns the Dutton Ranch.
Okay.
He's the guy. And the Dutton Ranch is the size of Rhode Island.
Wow.
So a lot of, you know, you have a battle with the Native Americans on Native American land. And he's got three kids. And they're all kind of rebelling against him a little bit. But, you know, one is not. And, oh, man, it's just a really... really gritty movie. It's okay. A really gritty cowboy movie, and it's just action from the get-go, and he's got issues with his kids and issues with, you know, the Native Americans moving in, and the Native Americans got a new chief, and oh man, it's just is issues and, you know, fun, and oh man, it's just such a great series. I mean, oh.
How far into it are you?
Oh, God. Episode four right now.
On episode four.
I'm on episode four, and it's, like, really starting to get crazy. You know, they're starting to, you know, kill people and blow up mountains and moving. In one of the episodes, there's a developer that's coming into the town, and he's trying to move in on a lot of the property. And where he's building these condos, he's using hydroelectric to power the condos
right
from the river, and upstream is the Dutton Ranch, where Kevin Costner's like, you know, this guy's going to be using the river, and he's going to be funneling it, and it's going to choke, you know, it's going to have some choke points, and it's not going to be able to feed the cattle or water the cattle and stuff like that. So he's like, you know what, we're just going to move the river. So he has some guys go up to the top of the mountain where the river is like starting, and he blows up the mountain to revert the river. And it completely puts the developer out of, like, the business. Like, not out of business, but he can't do anything. He can't build because this whole thing was around doing hydroelectric. And it was just so awesome to see that. He just goes up there and just a couple of charges, boom, 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 reroutes the river.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it's, like, badass like that. Mm. I mean, like, oh, yeah, it's – And the one thing that I always watch, and it's just so badass. So they lose some cattle, and the cattle goes on to Native American land.
Okay.
So the Native American have their own police, and they're saying, hey, we're not going to give the cows back. And Kevin Costner's character is like, yeah, we're going to go and take them. So they gear up, and it's like 20, 30 guys, and they all have like this huge entourage getting led by a police car. They're going past all these guys. And
what's the time period of this show?
Recent.
It's not like Old West.
No, it's not like the Old West or anything like that, which makes it, like, I think, a little bit more crazier, because you got to think about, okay, are they breaking any laws doing this? Yeah. What's going on? Are they in the right or are they in the wrong? And I think the most badass part of it is they have their whole entourage. They're going through traffic on a highway, and Kevin Costner's character is flying in a helicopter like a 20, 30 feet off the ground, leading the convoy.
Jeez.
And it's total badassery, man. I just love that scene. And anybody that's watched Yellowstone, you could definitely know what I'm talking about. And it's just like it sets up this huge shootout. It's just amazing. And you got to watch it. If you haven't watched it, Watch the first episode. I'm telling you, you'll be hooked. It's great. It's awesome.
Okay. Here's one that, you know, that kind of started the whole, well, there's two shows that I think started the whole big, bad, binge-worthy thing. Let's talk about The Sopranos.
Oh, God.
You ever get into that? I tried getting into it, and it just didn't hold my attention.
I mean, it did. For me, it did, but it was, I mean, I love mob movies. I mean, yeah. I grew up, you know, grew up Italian. I'm black and Italian. I grew up in an Italian family where, I mean.
I'm black and Italian.
So
I'm Blitalian.
I'm Blitalian. But growing up, Sunday dinners, you know, having, you know, my grandparents and my mother and my uncles all coming in and talking about, you know, how they used to run with, you know, some these connected guys and stuff like that. And that was, you know, watching The Sopranos was kind of like that, but it was like, I didn't like that because it was more modern. I'm so old school.
Mm-hmm.
The Godfather.
Yeah.
Casino. Well, yeah, a little bit on the Casino, but Goodfellas.
Goodfellas, yeah.
Stuff like that, man. You know what I mean? Like, when we used to get around, you know, on Sunday dinners, right after Sunday dinners, we'd do a binge of part one and part two of The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so that, for me, like, those are always going to hold precedent. But
right.
I never really got into that because it was just more modern, and it was just like, man, I don't know. It seemed more of a just an action series than it did an actual mob movie or a mob series. Even though obviously it was, and I mean, my God, The Sopranos got to probably go down
as one of the
best series out there.
That's the rep, and lots of people just love it. And yeah. I don't know why. It just after the first eight episodes, I just.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I liked it, but not enough to keep going back to it. Like, there was more stuff. Oh, this is out now? Now I'm watching this.
Yes.
And I just never went back. What about Breaking Bad?
Never got into that one either.
You know, and this is another one. I watched the first few of my kids, who are like 19, 20, 21, they have watched the entire series. They love it. They think it's great.
Yeah.
I watched a few episodes, and again, it just was like, I don't know, maybe there wasn't enough action, you know, it just didn't,
I don't know,
didn't hold it for me. I don't know.
I mean,
but that's a show that everybody I know says is just fan-freaking-tastic.
Yes. Yeah.
And you got to watch the whole thing.
I'll take their word for it. Mm. I mean, I never really got into it, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever, so. I mean, I guess I can go back and watch it, but it never really piqued my interest in all that. I mean, you can get that in probably a million TV movies or shows and stuff like that. I don't know. It wasn't something that was like, oh, man, I think I got to watch this. Like, in the beginning when it started to air, I really wanted to get into it, but then I was like, no, I think there's something else better on TV.
All right. So, growing up, you know, I was very into animated shows and everything.
Oh, God, yeah.
I grew up in that whole golden era of, you know, when
Speed Racer.
I grew up with Speed Racer, you know, Voltron.
Yeah.
You know, all those shows. And so, you know, you see some of this stuff coming out or being remade, and you're wanting to see it, you know, and One of the live action takes that I decided to watch,
which was
One Piece.
I mean,
and that was an anime series that, you know, it's still going on, 20 something seasons into it.
I mean, there's over 120. I was asking, so I started watching One Piece, the live action. At first, I was kind of like, this is kind of not good, because the last live action movie that I watched from anime was Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson, with my girl ScarJo, baby. And I was super hyped for it. I went to see it with my sister-in-law. She was pretty hyped for it because she does anime as well as I do.
Right.
And I love Ghost in the Shell. I think I've watched almost every Ghost in the Shell episode, except for the new ones. I don't like the new ones, but at least the old ones. And we went, and don't get me wrong, I mean, it was an unbelievable movie, but they crammed like three seasons of Ghost in the Shell into that one movie.
Yeah.
So it was kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I did like it for the visuals. I mean, the person that made the movie, I forgot the guy's name, but the director that made the movie was, right. I mean, went above and beyond. I mean, they were using new technology, new
effects.
CG and stuff like that. And it was absolutely incredible as a visual. But, I mean, the one thing that I was very disappointed in that movie was in the beginning of the anime, they had this beautiful orchestra playing this song that it took the creator like years to get on the anime. And they didn't even put it in the show. They didn't put it in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, I was like, okay, well, that's just kind of a letdown. But, I mean, that's one of the ones that I love there. But One Piece, going back to One Piece, I mean, I started watching it, and it kind of got me hooked on it.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it kind of got really me hooked on it. I was very much getting into it by like the third episode, and I'm like, all right, this is pretty good. I never did One Piece the anime, but because I was gonna, I immediately after I watched the live action, I called my friend Melvin. I'm like, dude, I'm like, you know, how close is it to, you know, the live action to the anime? He's like, yeah, it's pretty good.
They did a good job, and they did a great job matching the actors
to it.
And even the way they looked, you know, really, they really did a good job. They really did a good job. What about, let's move it back, Peaky Blinders?
Nope. I mean, I never got into that. You keep telling me to watch it. It's an amazing series, and I'll definitely take your word for it. Probably when I'm done the first season of Yellowstone, because right now I'm like heavily invested in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
When I get done Yellowstone, I'll jump into a season of Peaky Blinders and get that. Because I love, so I've seen a bunch of clips of Peaky Blinders, and they're really good. The one person that I really would love to see, because I love this guy, is Tom Hardy in it.
Tom Hardy is fantastic.
Yeah, because he's Alfie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He plays the head of the Jewish mob.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
he's
God.
Just amazing. But you want to see Cillian Murphy, you know, why? I think one of the reasons that Oppenheimer was as successful as it was because of the fame of Cillian Murphy that he got, really, doing the Peaky Blinders.
I think so. And I mean, he was in. I was gonna say Tenet, but it's not Tenet. Same guy, Leonardo DiCaprio movie with Christopher Nolan that directed it. What the hell is that movie? Damn, it's on the tip of my tongue. I can't get it. You know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about Batman Begins?
No,
he was the scarecrow. He was the scarecrow in Batman Begins.
I know he was.
Yep, and really, really a great casting for that too.
Oh yeah,
but that's just six seasons. You know, the sixth season kind of petered out because one of the main actresses who played one of the main characters, Polly, Helen, was, I think it's McElroy, is her name. She passed away.
She did.
From cancer.
Oh, wow.
And she was one of the main. And so instead of recasting her or, you know, kind of writing her out, you know, or they basically made it like she had been killed. But now, how would that affect everybody else? And she really was kind of Tommy Shelby's, who's Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
His like moral compass.
Oh.
And so when she was gone, just everything went to crap.
Oh.
And
so they really played on that too,
They really played, the whole family just started to really drift, and there was a whole bunch of tension and rifts that developed, and Tommy didn't know, you know, really wasn't sure what he was doing at some points because he just was lost without her there.
Wow.
And you know, but now they're making a movie. I guess.
Are they?
They're doing it. They're doing a Peaky Blinders movie that's in production right now.
That's interesting.
So one of the latest new things that's come out is Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman on Netflix.
The Gentleman.
The Gentleman.
Now, and you watched it, didn't you?
I did. I watched it eight episode. It's an eight episode season that came out, and really, really well done. There's fun.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of romance. There's action. Mm-hmm. There's it's kind of like the, you know, if you take the crime in Peaky Blinders,
yeah,
and you throw in the poshness of like Downton Abbey,
yeah,
because it's all about this guy, Eddie, who, you know, comes from an aristocratic family, and he's like the straight laced, you know, military guy, and his father dies,
yeah,
and who's the Duke, and everything passes to him.
Oh.
And all the, you know, so you've all of a sudden you've got all this tension right now because he's not the oldest son. So the oldest son is bypassed and everything is given to him.
Oh, wow.
Which creates a bunch of tension. But then you realize that a lot of his money came from these drug dealers.
Right.
Who are using his land.
Yes.
And it was, that was part of the dad's income.
Yep.
And he gets caught up in this, and it becomes this whole thing. Is he trying to get them off his land? Is he going to take over the business? What's going to happen? And so you've got all of this great intrigue and
oh,
action,
wow,
and crime, and but all the whole poshness of you're dealing with the criminal underworld, and then you've got the Duke, you know, and it's just, it's so crazy. It's crazy good. And the ending was great. So if it comes out with a season two,
yeah,
you're all set, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, wow.
But they didn't do it in such a way that you were left cliffhanging either. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll have to watch that.
It was really well done. I really liked it a lot.
See if I can get an episode in tonight. But I did some research. I know we were talking about that. So it doesn't have anything to do with the movie. So the movie The Gentleman is about this guy. I think his name is Mickey. He has the marijuana fields in different estates. Obviously this is probably one of them. There's really no connection. So, and he's trying to retire, he's trying to get out, and They try to, you know, double cross him and stuff like that. Deals go bad, and he ends up kind of staying out type of deal. And this, from what I've read and researched, it doesn't really have anything to do with the movie, but it's in the same universe.
Yeah.
So it is technically one of the other, because in the movie it states that he has a you know, tens or 15.
There's 13 estates. There's more than a dozen estates that are part of this pot growing business.
So this is part of that. It's just another end of the story,
right?
So, which is really cool. So I'll watch it.
Yeah.
I'll see what's
watch
going
it.
On.
It's good. So what's the final verdict here on the Alec Bradley cigar?
You know, I really like it. It's got that the woodiness, and the sweetness is actually coming through with the rum, which is really nice. Cedarness, the cedar sweetness is in there. The spice kind of mellowed out big time as you kind of going through the cigar and everything.
Very straightforward.
Yeah, it's not complex.
Wasn't complex at all, but it was very consistent all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So it was pretty nice.
And definitely worth it. Only 500 boxes were made.
Yeah, definitely
a
buy.
We've got some more here at Twins, so come on down and get it.
Come on down.
And now we're going to switch gears, and we're going to do a pipe tobacco that was introduced to us at the Peterson event, which we call the Petey Blinders.
The Petey Blinders. What do we got?
And it is called Temple Bar.
Temple Bar.
It is a GLP's blend. It is part of his Old London series. And let me read you what it says on the tin. Temple Bar, rich, ripe, red, sweet, golden Virginia tobaccos are generously spiced with fine, fragrant orientals and enhanced with a delicate touch of perique for a bit of added depth and complexity. The leaf is carefully layered and pressed for a fortnight.
Not the game, people.
That means 20 days for those of you in Rio Linda. A fortnight into large cakes, which are then cut into bars, tinned, and ready to be sliced and rubbed out as desired for your ultimate smoking pleasure. GLPs.com.
And we got a nice Virginia perique. Let's get it.
Well, you know, it's Virginia and Orientals mostly, so it's considered a Virginia Oriental blend. There's very little perique in here. There's not much to speak of, just a little tiny bit.
Whoa. Whoa. Right on the light. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. This is...
And it's a pretty solid bar, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not as hard to cut as, like, Spark Plug is, I think.
You're right.
But you need a really sharp knife, and you need a cutting board to get through this stuff. But you cut it... you can cut it as thin or as thick as you like. I know people that cut it a little thicker and then cut it into cubes.
Mm-hmm.
However you want to do it, rub it out. I did it really thin, almost like a shag cut,
mm-hmm.
rubbed it out back into ribbon, and we've all put it into our pipes like that.
Mm.
What kind of things are you getting off of this?
Floral notes.
Mm-hmm. That's the Orientals there.
Sweet floral notes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I get. A little bit of spice at the end, but right on the tip of the tongue.
Mm.
But, wow, is this
Yeah, there's some
good.
Spice in the retro.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know.
Yeah, very tasty.
Yeah, this is
very tasty
good,
stuff. I need to try a little bit of it with the rum here and see what happens. Mm. Oh. Yeah, the sweetness of the rum really helps the Virginias out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Wow. Yeah, baby.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these things. Some of these shows, I kind of got, talked into watching.
Which ones were you talked into watching?
And this is going back a little bit to the remake in the early 2000s of Battlestar Galactica.
Hold on. Before you go any further, yeah. Do we have a flashback of the week?
We do.
We should get into that before we go into movie talk.
You want to do that first?
Do the flashback.
All right.
Let's see what we got for flashback, Dan.
Let's do the flashback here. All right. Today's 724 flashback is, and this is our weekly segment where we bring up a historical event brought to you by 724 Cigars. Smoke a piece of history.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and today's flashback is that this very week in March 1939, Ohio State coach Harold Olson started a single elimination basketball tournament between eight schools that today is known as March Madness.
Wow, 1939, you said?
1939 that started.
Wow.
And it's grown and grown and grown in popularity, and today 68 schools participate in that single elimination match.
Wow.
And the term March Madness, where did that come from? It was first used in reference to basketball by an Illinois high school official, Henry Porter, in 1939. March Madness wouldn't become associated with the NCAA tournament until Brent Musburger used it during his coverage of the 1982 tournament.
This is March
so
Madness.
So for the last 42 years,
yeah,
March Madness, he is Brent Musburger. You remember watching him doing sports?
Yes, I have.
Famous sportscaster. That's how this whole thing started. And maybe this is another television thing we can talk about. During March, second half of March, the back 3 weeks of March, mm-hmm. everybody's talking about college basketball
yep.
and March Madness and all these teams and everything. And I have to tell you, I have never been into March Madness.
I haven't either, man. I'm not a basketball guy.
I feel a little bit bad because I know there are tons of people into it, and I'd love to speak more to it and what's going on, but I spend I'm at Twins all the time. I don't have time to watch basketball. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and when the games are on, I'm like falling asleep.
Yeah, I mean, I watch the Celtics. I watch a little NBA stuff. But, I mean, the college stuff, the March Madness. I mean, a bunch of my friends, I mean, they follow it religiously. But that's just, I mean, that's them.
Mm-hmm.
They do a little betting on the side and stuff like that, and they follow it religiously.
Have you ever gotten into that betting and all the sport and stuff?
No, man. No.
I've never been a big betting person
either.
I probably sound really boring to everybody out there.
I just give all my money to my wife. That's a gamble for me right there. that's enough gambling for me right there. It can go good, it can go bad, but I usually always win, so I'm okay with that. Speaking of that, we're just watching the TVs on. They're talking about betting right now, isn't that? It's an AI algorithm right there going to work. Gotta love that.
And it's funny because they've got right at the bottom of the screen, gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Yeah. I bet you call that number and they'll talk you into putting in a bet. Be like, no, well, put this bet
Let's
in.
Hope
if you
not.
If you bet more than $100, then you have an addiction. If not, then we'll send you off to the next best guy to take some bets. I mean, yeah, I've never been into any of that stuff. Never been into betting, never been into
tickets.
No, never been into it. I mean, it's fun.
Horse races?
Never, man. I've been to
FanDuel?
Nope, none of that. None of any of that. Never did any of the
squares.
Betting. I mean I've done squares. I mean, everybody's done squares. I mean, but I don't like, oh, I got to go. I got to get the squares. No, that's not me. I mean, I've been to the casino a bunch of times, mostly for the free drinks that you get on the floor when you're playing blackjack or something like that. But, I mean, nothing serious.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I never really got into it. It's all good. Just spend my money on ammo and guns or something like that and cigars.
Just ammo, guns, and cigars.
Ammo, guns, and cigars,
oh,
baby.
Oh, my gosh.
That's it. That's all I need. Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Are you into any sports at all yourself?
I was into football.
You were into football, yeah. You were playing
I played high school. I went from high school to playing semi-pro. I played semi-pro for like 7-8 years. Tried out for the pros. Tried out for Jack Del Rio in Florida. They had an open tryout. I think one of the first open tryouts in a long time, and they had that down there, and made it to the second practice, and I got cut after that. So I wasn't good enough to make the team, but I was good enough to make the second practice, so I was happy about that.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, so, but, yeah, when I was playing semi-pro, I used to have conversations, and it would be funny because everybody would be like, naming the guys on the field and, watching, NFL and stuff like that. I never knew any of those names. And they're like, Nick, don't you, you play, don't you watch? I'm like, man, I trained so much and I worked that night. When I wasn't working, I was sleeping. If I wasn't sleeping, I was training. And I would train 3-4 hours a day, every day. So, no, I lived it. I lived it and played it. I wanted to be the best person on the field. So, yeah, never really watched it. I started watching it after I started playing because then I'd sit and watch it at a friend's house or my brother's house or something like that. But that's about it. And now, chickens are pretty much taking over my life right now.
The chickens, man. I don't really have anything to – I don't know what to say to that, Nick. I don't know what to say to that. You've gone from semi-pro football to chickens.
Chickens, baby.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's go back to this whole BSG thing. You know, I grew – again, talking nostalgic thing. And they're doing this – Hollywood's doing this over and over and over again. They're taking vintage shows and redoing them.
Yes.
You know, and it's, you know, and maybe this is, you know, this is kind of getting tiring. But every once in a while, they do something right. And, you know, they took the whole Lauren Green, you know, version of Battlestar Galactica from the late 70s, 1980. And basically, which was kind of campy and fun and stuff. And basically said, you know, what if this were really serious?
Yeah.
And they redid it. And, you know, they changed some things. They made one of the main characters, Starbuck, who was a guy in the original series, they made Starbuck a girl.
Mm-hmm.
They made the Cylons look like people, these robots who were, like, out to destroy the human race.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, the whole making Starbuck a girl thing, that's just, you know, dumb Hollywood, you know, let's flip things around. And if the Cylons look like people, you know what that means? They've got no budget. So I ain't watching this. And, you know, it was, you know, on for a while. And people who were really into sci-fi were like, Dan, you've got to watch this. What are you talking about? This is just really, this has got to suck. You know, and I was basically forced to sit down and watch it. And what they made me watch was a special that they had on. It was like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And it basically, in 45 minutes, recapped season one and season two of the show.
Okay.
And watching it, I'm like, you know, this is actually not that bad.
Oh.
And I go back and started to watch it. And it really, in my mind, was some of the best TV on at the time.
Battlestar Galactica,
especially the opening two episodes of season three, in my mind, are still some of the best TV ever. Ever.
Really?
And I won't talk about it because I don't want to be spoiling or whatever, but those two episodes in particular were just so well done and so crazy. And, you know, the whole thing of, you know, thinking that you're going to, you know, your guys are going to win and everything. And then, you know, hope is just ripped away from you. And then when you think, oh, there's just no way. All of a sudden, hope comes back and everything changes. And you're like, I was an emotional wreck. It was, you know, when shows can do that and get you so into it. And, and that's when you know you got something good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get emotionally involved in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's probably why I like Yellowstone is because it gets you kind of emotionally. It kind of gets you emotionally involved in it on what's going on. And, you know, people die and they, you know, this and that. And, you know, the hard, you know, the hidden meaning behind why all the kids really don't want to be at the ranch. Mm. And, you know, and the Kevin Costner's character, I mean, is just such a hard ass.
Mm.
And you're like, damn, why has he got to be such a hard ass? And then one of the scenes after one of his kids die, he, like, breaks down. He brings a horse to one of the stalls, and he just breaks down and cries. And you're like, oh, okay, he does have a heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you kind of get involved in that way. So it's really got me, and I'm really enjoying it so far.
That's good.
But on the other note, Hollywood needs to stop trying to make live-action movies of anime stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
One Piece was probably exception, and everybody in the world that's watched it that is a big fan of that can probably say, okay, yes, that's the exception. Definitely the exception. But other than that, I mean, they need to relax. They need to relax. It's crazy,
and
man.
Sometimes you may need to go the other way. Like, for instance, one of the great shows that's come out recently, also on Netflix, was Blue Eye Samurai. Have you seen that?
I haven't.
Now, Blue Eye Samurai was originally going to be live action.
Right.
And as they were thinking about it, they changed their minds and decided to do it animated instead.
Thank God.
Star-studded cast.
Yeah.
You know, the main antagonist is Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, and George Takei is in there, too. I mean, just great you'll recognize the voices as you hear them. Mm. But, you know, the plot is about the, you know, it takes place in the Edo period in Japan when all of the, you know, European people were kicked out.
Yep.
And there's a, you know, it centers around the story of Mizo, who's a girl who's the product of a French person and a Japanese.
Interracial so marriage.
Wasn't marriage.
Relationship.
You know, relationship. And but she has blue eyes. Uh-huh. And in that time period and in this story, to have to be mixed race is to be sub.
Yeah.
You're basically, you know. You're lower than low.
Yeah.
And so she's out for revenge, trying to find the guy who was her father.
Ah.
And to kill him for making her what she is.
Oh, wow.
In Japanese culture was like, she's a devil.
Really?
And it's just really, really good.
Oh, man. I think I'm gonna have to watch it then.
Great animation, great storyline, you know, the perfect balance of, you know, the whole anime thing, you know, fighting and action and fun and humor and character development.
Mm-hmm.
Great job. It got renewed for season two, but they're talking that it may even be a couple, 3 years.
Yeah, to make it and everything.
To make it and everything come out. But seriously, one of the best animated things that I've seen come out in a long time.
Wow.
And I'm so glad that they thought about this would probably work better if it were animated. And some things, that's one of the reasons these live action remakes just don't hold up.
Right.
Is because there's some things you can do in animation that just don't work in real life.
Right.
You know,
well, you have a little bit more freedom doing it in animation because obviously you don't have to pay the actors. You do to do the voiceovers, but, or the voice acting, but I mean, you don't have to have them do stunts or hire more people to do those stunts and hire for training and everything.
Sometimes what they do in the anime, when you try and copy that on the big screen, it just looks dumb.
It looks dumb. You got the wires, they're flying all over the place. Yeah, it gets a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice that they just stayed with the anime on that one.
Yeah, so you gotta watch that, Nick. You gotta watch Blue Eyed Samurai.
I'll have to watch it.
Really, really good.
Mm. Danny, what do you think of this tobacco so far? I'm really digging it.
I like it a lot.
The floral notes, the sweetness coming through. It is a fantastic, fantastic smoke. I really, really like it. No, I'm smoking mine in a bigger bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting more Virginias, and then the Orientals are kind of coming in and kind of like an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And yours is more of a narrower bowl than mine. What do you think of it?
I'm getting a lot more. I get a ton of floral notes, like you're talking.
Okay, yep.
And a lot of zip, again, from the Orientals. It's kind of this almost like a baking spice kind of pepper on my lips.
Yep.
Not on my tongue, but on my lips.
Really?
You know, this real tingly. And, you know, some wood and bread and just a little bit of like a stewed fruit sweetness from the Virginias. But it's more of this almost like a rye bread kind of flavor from the Virginias.
Almost like a pumpernickel.
I don't really taste perique much at all. Do you?
No. I mean, if it's there, it's very mute. I mean, you're getting a lot of floral notes, the bread notes, soft notes, and then the sweetness is really, really up front, definitely in the foreground, and it's very, very nice.
And there's this very as you retrohale, not at the start, but like at the end, you get some spice that comes through there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really, really good. And the rum is bringing more sweetness to it.
Yeah, it is.
Which I think helps you appreciate the Virginias more, but it doesn't drown out the Orientals.
No, it does not.
Or that floral note or spice that's
if
there.
If anything, it's making the Orientals pop a little bit more, which is really, really nice, man. I mean, bravo to GLP. I mean, GLP makes some great stuff, but bravo
to this one.
I mean, we were going through some of the selections that were, you know, in the show and everything, and I'm like, half of them are all Latakia, Virginia, mm-hmm. Orientals. I'm like, it's all English.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, this one's not English. And I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Let's do this
yep.
one. Yep. I'm very happy with doing this one, man.
Very good. So this is a winner to you?
Definitely a winner, man.
All right.
It's good stuff.
All right. Well, people, that is pretty much time for us to head out.
Yes, we are, brother.
The end of another episode of Not Just Blowing Smoke. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back with you next week with a new cigar, new pipe tobacco, and some new stuff to talk about.
Probably another guest, too, man.
Maybe a guest too. Who knows? We do that.
I don't know. But stay smoky, my friends.
Stay smoky, my friends. Thanks.